you.
What about this one for my nephew?
A superb choice.
Oh, great.
You provided he has already read Infinite Crisis and 52 and is familiar with the reestablishment of the DC multiverse.
Who am I, Cypher? The gayest X-Man?
I recently read this novel called Watchmen. I've never read a comic book like this. I used to read Betty comics, but that's it. I've never read, like, real comic books. This worked my out.
Excellent!
Hello, hello, hello. This is Chris and Eric's Songbox Adventure.
I'm Chris.
And I am Eric. Last week, we discussed Volume 2 of the original Ultimate series. And at the end of that episode, I said that I would be having us read another satirical piece of early 2000s Marvel comics. And I think I specifically said that it would probably be better and more successful at what it was trying to do than the Ultimates was. And I may or may not have lied without intending to, because this is a case wherein I read a comic like a year ago and was like, that could be interesting to talk about on the podcast. And we're just now getting around to it. And I think my feelings have gotten a bit more complicated, but we are discussing Howard the Duck, specifically the 2002 Marvel Max miniseries. It is 6 issues long. The creator roll call we have, it is written by Steve Gerber, the original co-creator of Howard the Duck. We have Phil Winslade is the artist on the majority of the series. Chris Chukri is the colorist, with, as always, Richard Starkings and Comicraft doing the lettering. And we have just one issue with a little bit of fill-ins for the art. We have Glenn Fabry on issue 3 does the pencils and some of the inks with assists from Gary Leach. And with the roll call out of the way, like I said, this is a Max comic. I believe the only Max series we've done before this was the Rawhide Kid, right?
Oh, yeah, this definitely earns the Max label, unlike Rawhide Kid, which I was very confused by because I've only read, I guess now, 3 Max series, and the one that I had read before this podcast was Jessica Jones, which is different from this in that it's good, and different from Rawhide Kid in that it also actually earns the Max label.
Rawhide Kid got the Max label for being about a gay guy. Howard the Duck at least has a bunch of gore and tits in it, so the Max label doesn't feel offensive. The parental advisory is not homophobic in nature, but
no, it's a justified parental advisory. God, this comic is ridiculous.
To set the scene time-wise, like I said, this is 2002. It is that period of post-Comics Code, pre-Disney, turn-of-the-century Marvel, where people got away with a lot, and culture is going to be something we're going to be talking about a lot today, because as a satire that we'll talk about how much it is or is not successful, but as a satire, it is very steeped in early 2000s American pop cultural references. Timeline wise, this has the little rectangle on the cover that all Marvel books did at this time period, the little ribbon with the Twin Towers. This is very specifically that right immediately after 9/11 period of Marvel, as also evidenced by the ads inside. Some of the issues have advertisements with the Ultimates that we were just talking about. So, is a very specific pop cultural moment that we will get into. But I suppose before we fully dive into that, I'll go ahead and ask, have you read any Howard the Duck prior to this?
I have read, at the very least, some of the Chip Zdarsky post-Disney buyout run, where Howard is a, like, private detective, and the series is more aimed, not, it's not directly aimed at an all-ages audience, but it's, like, close enough to that that it has a crossover with Squirrel Girl. And I thought that stuff was actually quite delightful. It's a very fun run. It's funny, and, like, it plays itself more just as a regular, like, just a funny comic book series about a guy who's a duck. It's not trying to be satire in the way that I understand most of the rest of Howard the Duck is.
Yeah. My reading history is about the same. I can't recall having read any Howard books besides the Zdarsky books. I certainly haven't read the original, like, 70s stuff that Gerber was originally doing. But for sake of any listeners who are unfamiliar with the character, Howard the Duck is essentially what you would sort of picture an anthropomorphic duck looking like. You know, he's not a normal Earth duck.
He's Donald Duck.
Yeah. Yeah, a duck on legs who got transported to our reality against his will and is very crass and unhappy about being flung into this world that he has no business being in. And he has a longtime friend named Bev, who is a traditionally attractive woman, human woman. And a lot of their adventures just involve them getting into trouble and having a hard time. And Bev's ex slash Howard's main antagonist, to the degree that he has one, is Dr. Bong, who is a guy with a gigantic golden bell helmet. Did you know about Dr. Bong?
No. No, I did not know about Dr. Bong. But, like, in terms of, like, the name Dr. Bong in the early 2000s, I really would have expected to look different. Like, I wouldn't have expected him to be Bell Fiend. So I was like, oh, this must be an old character who's come back. I had never heard of Dr. Bong before. I have finally discovered a Marvel character so obscure I have no fucking clue who they are. It's been a while since that last happened.
In that case, I, if nothing else, have at least successfully exposed you to a little corner of the Marvel Universe you weren't as familiar with.
And then that corner of the Marvel Universe exposed itself to me.
I'm getting the distinct feeling that you didn't like this book very much.
Let me put it this way. It's impressive that after I read the first issue of this, I did read the other five.
Damn.
We said last week we were going to have a better early 2000s comic from Marvel. And then I read this and I was like, oh no. I don't get any of this. I think this is meant to be funny.
Yeah, which, to go back to sort of what you were saying about difference from the Chip Zdarsky run, this is satire that is very sardonic and also takes itself seriously. You know, it's not just a comedy book that is totally zany and goofs. It is very much like, here is a story about two screwed over fuck ups just trying to get through their day, and they go through adventures that are meant to be humorous, but they also veer into handling subject matter that is often handled irreverently, but also with some amount of earnestness, I would say. We'll get into why we think a lot of it doesn't really work, I'm sure. But essentially where the book starts out is that Howard and Bev have fallen on hard times to such a degree that they are stuck living inside a shed in a scrapyard, and Howard is having trouble finding employment because he is a duck in a human world, and Bev has been struggling but trying to get employment, and Bev ends up getting a too good to be true sounding office job for a company entitled Globally Branded Content.com, a division of Bellwether Media Group. Bellwether. Pin in that for later. And she shows up and it's fucked. She's getting paid a lot of money to not know what to do. Everyone around sort of looks like clones of each other. And spoiler alert, it's a front for Dr. Bong, who a lot of this comic is going to be Dr. Bong just chasing after Bev as a jilted ex type, is what it's going for to some degree, but really just at this point, literal stalker who, quote unquote, wants the best for her and is trying to give her this job, but really just wants to get with her. And before that, Bev ends up embroiled in this mystery over the contents that the company is producing, namely boy bands. And before the whole Dr. Bong reveal at the end of issue one, a lot of this is about boy bands and this company being a front for a cloning operation that genetically engineers potential boy band members, focus group tests them, and then just reduces the failures back to primordial ooze. Where should we start?
I mean, I think that the term focus test is an interesting way of phrasing that here, considering what they're doing. Should we quickly, just so people understand the vibe of this whole comic, this is what the focus testing consists of. They get a bunch of middle-aged gay men in, have them drop their pants and put like a device that measures how hard their dicks are while they watch footage of these boy bands. And that's how they determine which ones are going to be successful. This is the level of sort of edgelordy humor that we have throughout the entire thing. The occasional, like, good-ish joke, like, globallybrandedcontent.com is a reasonably solid, if certainly nowadays, kind of obvious go-to joke name for a company that's producing media of some kind, you know, especially now that like everything is content, and they've even got regular people using that fucking word instead of saying what they actually make or are actually watching. You know, it's not content, it's a fucking TV show. We'll just call it a TV show. Yeah. This book is, it's insane.
Yeah. It is very much specifically satire by way of Steve Gerber looking around at a different facet of early 2000s American culture in every issue and pointing at it, and just having Howard the Duck sort of monologue about how artificial it is, you know, which in cases like this, like say with the boy band specifically, it's not that I so much find myself disagreeing with all of the most base concepts, so much as a lot of the humor just isn't actually funny, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it sort of comes off as just like, yep, Howard is a reasonably intelligent, depressed character who's sort of looking at the world and going, this sucks. And he's frequently right, but the humor we get along the way doesn't always live up to the level of either intelligence or just like unique creative insight that I think would be necessary to make this feel really forward thinking or fresh or just sort of more illuminating, you know, like coming into this. Everyone has heard the arguments by now about boy bands, girl groups, music industry in general being negatively affected by the consumerism of it, industry record label control, yada, 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 you know. But there's not really anything, at least to me, unique here said about that. With regards to the focus groups, as you just described for us what they were, that scene, or rather the immediate aftermath, gets one of the few, I think, sort of effective jokes, even though it is still edgelordy, when Howard the Duck says that middle-aged gay men have the same taste in men as prepubescent girls, which it certainly come off terribly and is certainly a risky joke to make, but I found humorous enough. But it is still all very edgelordy, like the literal just extremity of, just watch this. I'm going to conduct the focus group, and then a bunch of men sit down, and comic book technology just covers their dicks to measure how hard they get. It's ridiculous. And then I think a lot of the rest of the boy band humor here just gets really lazy in terms of just like the main boy band in question being called the Backdoor Boys, which just veers into very lazy gay humor to me. Like, it just is a gay joke. There's no nuance, no at least unique flair or idea that I've never heard of. It's just an old guy, presumably straight, but I don't know for sure, but I believe straight, old man going, boy bands are kind of gay. What did you think?
I mean, yeah, and like my other problem with the humor is it's very strange because it's way too heightened, but also not heightened enough. Like, it doesn't manage to do what I would think would be the joke you'd want to do with a character like Howard, where Howard the Duck is a cartoon character stuck in a mundane world that he can't fit into. But then the world is incredibly ridiculous. But it's not ridiculous in a cartoon way. It's ridiculous in a, like, just everything is... It's the humor's too literal for it to be as ridiculous as it is in the story. Like, the plots are too silly for how literal the subject matter that's being made fun of is. But the plots are... And the subject, like... But then it's also... It's not silly enough to quite match the cartoon duck that is the main character. So I'm not getting the like cartoon. Howard the Duck doesn't feel like he fits in this, but not in the way that I would want Howard the Duck to not fit into a story. Does that make sense? Like, it's not silly in cartoon ways, so it doesn't work just with Howard. But then the contrast with Howard and everything else doesn't work in the way that I would want it to, because the whole point of Howard the Duck is that he's a cartoon duck in the Marvel universe, which is technically like mostly like our world, or it's supposed to be. So I whenever I'm reading this, every time I look at it, I'm just like, Howard should be the most ridiculous thing on any given page. But he never is.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. For me, it's like, in a way, Howard fits in too much with the world because I never really feel a heightened or wide enough difference between him and the rest of the characters or the events tonally. Like, I don't think it would necessarily be that hard to just replace him with a human character without really disrupting how things feel. You know, like, although he pays a little lip service to being like, oh, I'm a duck, I don't fit in. Tonally and attitude wise, he largely seems to fit in to me. And visually, even, he kind of fits in. Like, I feel like Howard the Duck would be like a type of book that could potentially benefit from having like an intentional coexisting of multiple styles in the artwork, you know, like finding some way of making Howard visually pop against the rest of the characters, whether that be like a mixed media approach or something. But here, he's just kind of another miserable guy in this miserable world. And he is like our narrator telling us how ridiculous everything is. And it like feels like he thinks he's on the outside looking in. But I'm not really fully sold him being an outsider to the extent that I think would make his role more successful, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, on the note with the art, I think that back in the day, like back when Howard was created in the 70s, comic coloring then meant that his design did make him really stand out from the other characters. Because if everyone's in bright colors, but then one character is a cartoon duck, that's kind of all you need to make him stand out on the page and look like he's a duck from a cartoon. But in this, he's given the same early 2000s, like, you know, everything's got a little bit of brown in it. Marvel coloring that like ties him into the world too much. And I think literally, if they just did flats on him or made him brighter, that would get that idea across. Because this original Howard design is very cartoonish, and I don't think is that poorly drawn in this. I think that the reason he fits in too well visually, and they're not getting across this core aspect of the character is just that, like, he still looks like everything else. He's still got that same early 2000s coloring that I frankly I don't like. This is that period of coloring where a lot of books decided that everything needed to be very similar in color. And while there's a couple poppy moments in places in this, a lot of it just looks very dreary, which also strikes me as strange with the tone that this is supposed to be going for a lot of it, where it's supposed to be pretty wacky.
I agree, yeah. The coloration is all very sort of dull and muted, and there's not really enough contrasts and tones to even just be visually interesting and help differentiate between parts of compositions, much less, you know, reinforce Howard as an other figure. Art-wise, in general, here, I don't necessarily think the art is outright bad, you know, in terms of like basic fundamental skills or whatever. But I think it's largely just perfectly functional. You know, this isn't a book where I ever turn the page and am gobsmacked by how cool I think the visual is or how emotionally effective an artistic choice is. Every now and then, I'll think that some of the flow of action is a little awkward in like a page's layout, but it's never like so bad that I have no idea what's happening. So it all ultimately just ends up feeling like functional, middle of the road. And I guess I'll say, to be fair, this is an artist who is having to work with packing in a fair amount of text and concept into the issues. Like, I can imagine this being a bit of a challenge of a script to render, you know? And like I said, I don't think they do a bad job, but I really never find the visuals here exciting. Like, looking at it doesn't make me excited to keep reading.
Yeah. Like, on that note of overstuff, that summary you provided earlier, that was just the first issue. Which I think is also part of the problem, is that this every issue kind of abandons the premise of the previous issue and decides that it wants to be a satire on a different thing. And I think if the series just sat down and picked a thing to be about, then there would just be the space to do a better job. And I think part of the reason why all the satire is so direct and on the nose and winds up not being funny is because, well, next issue I have to satirize this entirely different thing. And that feels weird to me too. I'm like, you want to satire just like all of modern culture in 2001? Just all of it? In six issues? You're just going to try and do everything?
I think it ends up undercutting the book's ability to come off as intelligent, you know? Because, like, the way it does this with only having a limited amount of time to devote to each pop cultural topic, I think it really struggles to provide any nuance or any new lens on anything. I think it feels sort of rushed and fails to connect the dots of its own ideas. Like in the first issue, with talk about the boy bands and consumerism, there's a panel of Dr. Bong talking to Bev about like research showing a link between hooking girls on all of this sexual music and imagery, and somehow that can affect their politics later when they go on to vote. And it's just kind of like, well, what are you talking about? Because you're simply not actually taking the time to deliver a thesis, convey your idea, you know, sort of back up, okay, what and why. It's in some cases a little bit like Gerber takes certain things to be self-evident and not really feel the need to get into them. And it's like, on the most baseline level, you know, I can get the idea of just like, media informs people's attitudes, and people's attitudes affect how they vote. But that's the most baseline thing imaginable, and this doesn't actually go any further into that or say anything riveting or just insightful about boy bands. To give just another shout out to what time period we're talking about, I'm looking at the last two pages and I'm looking at an ad for PlayStation. And by PlayStation, I mean PlayStation. No number after it, because it was just the PlayStation. And PlayStation NFL video games available for purchase at Sears. I remember Sears. I don't know how many people who are even barely younger than me are gonna remember Sears.
I remember Sears, but that's such a of the moment thing. back when people actually played the games based on sports.
The issue sort of wraps up with the Dr. Bong reveal and the conflicts between Bong and Howard and Bev being like, this is fucked up. What are you doing to these people, these clones? And before I get into what happens to Howard here, I guess since I already mentioned it, I'll just go ahead and ask, what do you think of the whole character dynamic between Bev and Dr. Bong and just this ongoing insufferable stalker X as maybe meant to be comedic antagonist? What did you think of Dr. Bong?
I didn't care for him. And, like, one of the weird things about this book is literally every plot line feels like it doesn't really resolve. And the Dr. Bong one is also one, like, at the end of issue 3, Beverly just, like, threatens to kill him and then he leaves. But, like, he's already been, you know, she's already made it clear that she's not into him multiple times throughout the series. So, why that works that time doesn't make any sense, but he's just not in the rest of it, so I guess it did. I don't know, maybe he comes back in a future Marvel comic, but I don't remember anything from the Zdarsky run with Dr. Bong in it. I might be wrong, it's been a long time since I read it, and but like I feel like I'd remember this guy because he's ridiculous. I like what you said earlier about him, like having that weird plan to control the way that young women are gonna vote in the future by like using boy bands to influence them. That's all just part of this scheme with the boy bands and all that. It's just a way to like, I guess, annoy Beverly and like waste a couple days of her time. Like all of that is explicitly just part of his like get Beverly plans. You know, like he doesn't have any actual goal beyond just sort of fucking around with her life, kind of. In
Think
like
that,
none of it's in a
sorry.
way where like even going in like, okay, this guy's a ridiculous, like evil bell man. None of it's in a way that feels like it's an actual attempt at like seduction or trying to get her back or anything like that. It's just sort of doing stuff. Like, it doesn't feel like a proper revenge because he never tries to like actually hurt or kill her or anything like that. Nor does it feel like some sort of even a bizarre, twisted attempt at getting her back because he never actually really tries to do that. He even says like disparaging things about her in ways that I'm like, right, but aren't you doing, you're obsessed with her. You're doing all of this for her. So why are you in this being like, oh, I'd be the only person who would hire Beverly at whatever fucking salary? I'm like, w wouldn't, if he wants her back, which is like, I guess the implication here, shouldn't he be like, yeah, of course I hired you at that. You're worth that because you're, you know. But also, I'm a crazy bell man who you don't want to be with, who keeps going after you, and that's why I'm a problem. Like, it doesn't. I can't figure out the character at all. And the plots that he gets involved with are inconsistent, don't really finish out because each issue has to move on to the next thing so quickly that we never get a conclusion to basically any plot line. And aren't funny. And don't feel like they have sensible goals in mind. Yeah, I can't stand
Yeah.
them.
Yeah. It sort of feels like the narrative isn't really committing to what it wants his character and their dynamic to be. And to go back to the thing about, him not really ideologically giving a shit about the boy band stuff, that sort of undercuts the satire too, of just like, well, if you're doing a satire, then presumably the work should care about the topic that it is approaching if it is choosing to talk about it, you know, if it has something to say. But when the antagonist behind the plot doesn't even have an ideological investment in it, then it's hard for anyone else in story or reading it to as well. But to steer things back to Howard himself, at the end of issue one, he falls into the cloning vats and comes out with his, I guess, just DNA molecular stability fucked up. And so through the rest of the series, he proceeds to shift, to shapeshift into different forms against his will, with the majority of the time being spent as this rodent who... There are comments of like other characters calling him a rat and him saying he's a mouse. They read like they're supposed to be jokes, but again, it's not funny. And I just think it's a very strange decision to have a character named Howard the Duck, Howard the Duck, who never has a long-running series. You know, gets just a short-lived thing every now and then. So this would have been Howard's first solo, and God knows how long. And then he would not have had another one for, again, God knows how long. And for the choice for one of the brief blips of there being a Howard the Duck comic to spend a majority of the page time with him not being a duck is fucking weird.
The mouse thing really annoyed me. Like, honestly, from the cover, the first cover is a drawing of Mouse Howard, and I was just like, I assumed this was another character from Howard's universe. Like, I thought, okay, someone else is stuck here, and this someone is, like, clearly a Mickey Mouse joke, the same way that he's a Donald the Duck joke. Okay. You know, I expected this guy to be called, like, Michael Mouse, or something, you know? And no, it's just Howard. And now he's just sort of a sad rat thing instead of... And the design's worse than the duck! The design done for him now has, like, a lot of detail and hair, and, like, hair coming out of his ears, and I guess it's meant to make him look gross? But, like, it downplays the cartooniness of him to where now his, like, big cartoon eyes look weird. Like, the design no longer works for me because he doesn't look like a cartoon character. He looks like, Detective Pikachu, the movie, where they did all of those Pokemon with those realistic textures and some of them come out looking really gross when you do that. It's like that. But, like, in that, they were still bright and colorful and fun to look at, even when they were gross, and the gross felt like it was on purpose. Whereas here, I'm pretty sure the gross is on purpose, but, like, he's not bright and colorful to look at. He's not pleasant to look upon in any way. It bothers me. And, why the fuck is he a mouse for most of this? It doesn't play into anything. It's just, like, another thing for him to be, like, depressed about. And, like, this, he's already depressed enough that he's not an interesting protagonist to read about. Because in every single situation, his response to it is just to complain and sit down and complain some more.
Yeah, the shift in design to the brown fur just furthers the problem of him not being distinct and wacky in opposition to the rest of the world enough. Because it just plays right into that dim brown color palette that the book has. And, you know, I enjoy creators having the freedom to let characters change and grow and do unexpected things. And, you know, in corporate comics, I sometimes worry about like editorial mandate of going back to basics as like a hindrance. But there's no point to this, you know? And like, it's in the name, Howard the Duck. If you're gonna fucking make him not a duck for a period of time, it better be brief and you better be doing something. And this is not brief. It's most of the damn series. And it just accomplishes nothing other than making him uglier and stand out less from the background. In terms of topics of satire and plot, et cetera, I don't necessarily feel the need to really dive in deep on every little thing, you know? I think we can just sort of like talk about whatever little moments most interest us personally. Conceptually, it is very much just like him and Bev bopping around from one misadventure to the next. And like we've said, I don't think the satire is generally successful. So there's not really like highly thought-provoking stuff here to definitely dive into. But I'll at least briefly mention issue number 3 has one of the most blatant parodies, I guess, satirizations, a very specific one where they run into a cop, a female cop, and suddenly, for some reason, part of what Steve Gerber really wanted to play around with was doing a Witchblade parody, who is entitled Doucheblade. I think it's all pretty terrible.
I'm now looking at this, and because it's established that, like, a bunch of historical figures, including Jane Austen, Queen Victoria, and Eleanor Roosevelt, were doucheblades at some point, the Marvel Wiki entries for them must be pretty fucking interesting. Because I can't imagine there's that many Marvel stories featuring Jane Austen, but presumably there's a Marvel Wiki entry on her specifying that she got the magical bracelet that makes you a warrior and also gives you extremely large tits.
How about comparing the DC fandom wiki versus the Marvel fandom wiki for Hippolyta, Queen of the Amazons, who in DC is Wonder Woman's mother and occasionally Wonder Woman herself, and in Marvel Wiki presumably just says one of the carriers of the Doucheblade?
Yeah, because, I mean, Marvel's never going to fucking touch the Amazons as a concept because of Wonder Woman. So that must be the only thing. Oh my god.
We say all this, but I also have to wonder how much anyone who edits the Marvel wikis has ever read the Marvel Max Howard the Duck, and if this information would be present, or if it has been lost to the sands of time, and if we should simply put this book away and let it be lost to the sands of time where it is inaccessible because it is not even on Marvel Unlimited, and I had to get you second physical copies to be able to read it.
Yeah, I can't believe you spent money on this.
I remember enjoying this more the first time I read it, and I have no idea why or how.
There is a scene where Howard the Mouse gets the Doucheblade and grows giant mouse boobs and then falls over because of how heavy they are while murdering people. And I'm like, why are we doing an extended Witchblade bit right now? Like, I guess in early 2000s comic culture, this was more relevant than it seems now. But, like,
Mouse Howard growing giant tits in, like, having those giant tits rip out, including nipples showing on panel, is an early candidate for worst panel of the year, I'm calling it.
Or he's making a Britney Spears joke. Yeah. Yeah, this might actually win worst panel of the year right here.
And I'm glad you mentioned the Britney thing too, because that just takes it back to like the most lazy sort of early 2000s cultural commentary of just like, oh, we're joking about Britney Spears's body. And like, I did a double check for how old she would have been at this time. And Britney was at least an adult when this came out. This at least wouldn't have been commenting on her body that way when she was literally 16, the way that people did in real life. But it's still just hack shit, you know, just like the book making this Britney reference again, like, oh, we're being irreverent and poking fun at early 2000s American culture, but we're just going to do the same thing that culture does and just reduce Britney Spears to being a joke because she's a woman and because she is culturally considered hot. So her being hot is a joke and she must be dumb. There's also a sound effect that is spelled S-O-D-O-O-M, Sodom, which is very strange. Because how the fuck are you going to do a sound effect that is one extra O from spelling Sodom?
And that's, yeah, you're right. That's so fucking weird. That should just be boom. It's an explosion. What explosion goes Sodom? I don't even know how you arrive at that as a, yeah, what the fuck? Is that meant to be a Sodom reference? It's not the page for it. This is the page with the most tits on it.
Yeah, it's like, you could say, like, oh, linking Sodom to just, you know, whatever, like, moral degeneracy, whatever, the way that just, like, that word gets thrown around. But I would think if the book was gonna do it, then the place would be, like, somewhere in the boy band issue with all of the gay jokes. But, yeah, it doesn't make sense as a noise, as just like a choice you would make. It's just feels like a joke that's not actually fully delivered.
That's all of these jokes.
Speaking of half-baked jokes, issue 4 features them, by
Jesus
them.
Jesus Christ,
I
issue
mean,
4.
Howard.
I was like, oh, a Sandman joke. That's kind of funny. And then you keep going, I'm like, wait, wait, wait. Yeah, the weird house that is just entire, the entire Vertigo line is just in this house.
Yeah.
And there is page after page where the joke is just, look, it's a character from DC's Vertigo line. And I'm just like, you're right, that is a character from a comic better than this. But done in like a slight weird knockoff way so they can't sue you.
Yeah. Just Howard and Bev going through the hotel and opening up every door and meeting a new freak. We get the Sandman mystery theater guy. We get the lead from Trans Metropolitan, I believe it's called, the Garfinis book.
Yeah.
Who far overstays his welcome because he stays a central figure in issue 5 as well. We get, I think, probably the closest any of these could have come to being successful is when they enter that room and they meet the lineup of parodies of The Endless, but it just kind of keeps getting worse to include a character whose joke is just being fat.
Yeah, missing the point of the despair character from The Endless by just being like, ah, yes, fat and sad. Yeah. It. Well, and the Cain and Abel at the start is also a Vertigo joke, and also like the sudden appearance of angels in this because of like Lucifer and like the way that, you know, heaven and angels are a big part of several different Vertigo books, also is just like Vertigo reference. Like, it's just doing a lot of Vertigo things, and I don't know why. Again, I'm just like unclear as to why this is the direction we're suddenly going in. And all of the jokes are just, hey, this is that thing from that thing, you know.
It's very much just showing you the thing you're being made fun of and just thinking that a reference is a joke in and of itself. You know,
you know what this is?
What?
Sorry. This is those movies that they finally fucking stopped doing, and they release a new one every year, and they were just parodies of like every big movie from that year. And by parody, they just sort of had scenes from it, but like everyone had a dumb name. Like superhero movie and like those.
That was such a dark time in the history of America and of human entertainment, but you're completely right.
What the fuck? Sorry, I just looked up the superhero movie to try and get the name of some of the other ones, and the guy who made that is the guy who went on to make Chernobyl and Last of Us for HBO, both of which are like actually good. That's insane. What the hell?
Started from the bottom, now we're here.
Yeah, like, you made Scary Movies 3 and 4, produced and directed fucking superhero movie, and now this is where you are, making, like, critically acclaimed, really good television? What the fuck?
I think the last specific parody I feel the need to name in this book is that issue 5 is a satirization of Oprah, in which Oprah has been rendered unto a white woman named Ipra, which just...
Well, and she's a televangelist. I'm like, that's not what Oprah was. Like, it doesn't... I'm like, pick something. The IPRA feels like a weird reference that just distracts from the fact that this is actually, like, a televangelism thing. It's so bizarre.
It's like it's trying to give, like, its satirical takedown of multiple things at once. But in doing that, it's not taking down any of them because it becomes this mishmash that doesn't actually represent any of the things it's talking about, which just makes it ineffective in actually making a coherent point about televangelists or about, say, any of the more Oprah-specific critiques of entertainment. There is a bit about, like, some of the Book of the Month Club culture and the, like, self-help as product sort of industry, I think, is the closest it comes to, like, fulfilling an attempt to tackle a topic. But it's all becomes divorced from coherent reality in a way that just feels like spectacle, where I get the sense that the creative team thinks this is smarter than it is. Because, like, as like much as it puts on an air of irreverence by bringing up all these topics and all these specific references and just continually, you know, attempting to critique them, you know, the book is sort of entering the, I don't know, intellectual battleground, you know, like it is approaching as if it is going to have something to say, as if, oh, look at all these dumb things that are wrong with our culture. Let's critique them. But it really just does not feel like it has the intellectual bandwidth to successfully do that. I don't know. Do you agree?
Yeah, like it's just this comic needs to fucking pick one. Like maybe the whole like weird House of Vertigo characters could have been better if any of them got more than a panel and a half. So it's just like, hey, look at this. If you actually spent some time, dissecting the tropes of like the different adult Vertigo comics, the other like Max line, I guess, would be sort of, DC's equivalent at the time. Or like this stuff with Oprah, like making fun of televangelists sounds like a great idea to me, but why is it also Oprah? And why is it also Dr. Phil? And like, why does she have weird lines like, bring me the head of myself, the story of a woman who overcomes sexism, racism, and autism to achieve empowerment and live her dreams. And I'm like, where's even the joke? Like, it's just, you just put a bunch of things that have isms and they're all different things that, and none of it's actually in the comic or played with in any way. It's just sort of, here's some words, and she's just, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like really successfully tackling the sort of like inspiration porn sort of books would just take a level of earnestness and commitment that the book tends to shy away from, which the final issue here becomes the most serious. It most casts aside the air of humor, because the final issue is about Howard the Duck meeting God and going on a long conversation about the nature of creation and being a thing that is created and power and agency in one's life, that also becomes about work for hire and is very transparently about being a creator versus a contributor versus an owner in the context of corporate-owned characters, i.e., here is Steve Gerber coming back to Howard the Duck, a character he co-created 30 years prior and really defined but does not own and does not control. What did you think of the final issue? Did it seem as much of like a huge shift to you as it did to me?
I was wondering why we were suddenly just having a serious Duck Talks to God book all of a sudden. It honestly, this should have been like the end of Animal Man, where Grant Morrison is just in the fucking book. Like, this is a weird case where I'm like, okay, you're actually just talking about yourself, though, I think. Why don't you just be in the comic? Then you could just talk directly about these things. It just doesn't work for me. None of it works for me. There's like this very strange bit where they get on a like, just for example, for things that don't work for me, they are walking through, like, it's a very realistically rendered New York, and they get on a monorail that they like it drives into a Steve Ditko, Doctor Strange type space, and then it continues into like a white void, and there's a bit of surrealist imagery, and then we cut back into the monorail, and when they leave it, they're just in New York still. So I'm like, where did you even go? What was the point of that? Like, there's just, yeah. I was not emotionally invested enough in Howard the Duck's issues to care about him talking to God.
It felt like it's meant to be a serious, okay, laughs aside, let's be fully earnest discussion of deep issues about the nature of our lives and having to build our own meaning for ourselves. And it just comes out of nowhere for the context of the book. Like, I don't think Howard really has a coherent character arc in this book. Like, it's way too sloppy for this to feel like a successful grounding emotional finale for the story, which, you know, again, to what degree is there a story versus just ping pong ball machine movement from one part to the next. But it's like I could see like glimmers of like potential here of things that like could be good or like good ideas, whatever, within a better setup and more effectively constructed context. But it ultimately ends up feeling, again, just like it feels like it thinks it's smarter than it is. Throughout this and the book in general, there's just a lot of fairly lazy use of religious iconography and stereotype in a way that, again, just feels kind of hackish, like archetypal in a way that just lacks depth and is not really inviting meaningful thoughts about any of these issues that are being inherently raised by the plot. The jokes all just feel kind of obvious, like, oh, the Holy Trinity, we're gonna portray it as God has split personalities and Howard specifically meets God in a bar because he's been feeling so bad that he's been doing nothing but drinking ever since the Nazis because he feels so bad.
The joke would have landed a lot better if it was since the Spanish Inquisition. I was just like, really? 1938 is when God gave up on creation? Really? Like, if you're gonna do that, what?
There are also some very lazy, like, background gags that, like, lean into just this era shit Comedy Central-esque jokes about Muslims and about specifically, like, Islamic terrorists, and, like, there's shitty men expecting to meet virgins in heaven as a reward, but then we see him and the guy is getting chased by fat women, and that just is such a disgusting subversion of what he wants because the women are fat. So, oh no, maybe he's actually in hell. And just, there's a bunch of things like that where, like, successful irreverence takes a degree of intelligence and baseline empathy for your fellow humankind that I just don't think is present anywhere in this book. It feels just sort of like a washed up schmuck pointing around at everything and crankily going, this is bad, this is bad, I'm smart. But it's just like watching the dumbest person you know do that and being like, but you are also fucking dumb.
It's some real Ahmed the Dead terrorist type shit.
Exactly, yeah, it is that specific type of thing, yeah.
Like, God, remember when that was like the height of fucking comedy? Just everywhere? What a dark fucking time period.
Yeah.
The other thing that doesn't work for me, so, like, there is this very slight through line of Beverly being sick of being around Howard, both for the way that, like, being around him means that, like, weird Marvel Comics shit keeps happening to her, but also, like, him just being such a sourpuss is also, like, ruining their relationship? I'm like, I'm not even entirely clear what their deal is. Like, are they fucking? I can't tell. But then, like, she's not even in the last issue. Like, it never even resolves. She watches Howard, like, weirdly die in front of her because that's how he winds up talking to God. And then at the end, God puts him back in, like, the regular Marvel universe. And, you know, that's the last page. Beverly's not there. There's no resolution to this, like, vague through line of, you know, like, whatever's going on with them, you know, their, like, mutual happiness. None of that gets resolved. I'm like, that's, like, the one through line. I'm like, At the very least, I might wind up with like a positive opinion on if like there's some kind of halfway decent resolution to this character arc where like, she's tired of this. And there isn't, because it just never happens. It's just unacknowledged. Who cares, I guess. Yeah.
It's completely dropped, yeah.
And like I understood her desire to not be in this comic anymore. I was like, yeah, Beverly's the person that I'm identifying with here, because she's just wandering around going, why the fuck is this shit constantly happening? Can this stop? And then, they go to the fucking hotel they're trying to go to get away from all this shit, and it's the weird Vertigo house. And she's like, oh, great. Yeah, this is great. I hate this. I'm like, yeah, okay. I get that. We're just, I guess it doesn't matter. I don't know. Maybe this was an unexpected cancellation. Maybe this was meant to be an ongoing series.
Whatever the circumstances, I think we can just be thankful that there's not more of it.
Yeah. Early 2000s Marvel really did us a favor by leaving this at six issues.
With that said, is there anything else you want to touch on Howard the Duck, or are you ready to put it behind you and not think about it until we're talking about the worst comics of the year in a year's time?
Yeah, I think you've peaked early on that front. I don't know what the hell else could come up that's going to beat this. Certainly, worst panel. I've got like three or four entries just from like two pages of this book.
There's still time for Zombie Tramp.
No, I read this for you. I can't do any more.
In the meantime, what are you making me read next week?
Well, I was gonna have us cover a Judge Dredd story, but we're gonna delay that a little because I feel bad about the way we have treated early 2000s Marvel. We both love this period for the company, generally speaking. There are a lot of books that are really fucking good. And there's one that we haven't touched on at all. It's not an Ultimate book. It's not Straczynski Spider-Man. It's the Well, actually, there's a couple more that are really good that we haven't talked about. This is one of the ones we haven't talked about. Bendis and Malieve's Daredevil run. So we're going to be covering Daredevil 26 through 31, the first five issues of the Bendis Malieve Daredevil run. One of the best runs on this character. And hey, look, a good Marvel comic from the early 2000s. I actually mean it this time. I reread this recently. I know it's good.
That'll be good. I've never read it, but I like Maleev's art especially, so looking forward to that.
It has that early 2000s Marvel brown coloring that this book does, but it actually fits the tone.
Thank
It makes
God.
sense to do.
Yeah, that should be better. In the meantime, thank you for reading this. I think it's an interesting break from our usual good taste, if nothing else.
It's certainly
And
a time capsule. This could not have happened at any other time. Like, even excluding the fact that Marvel made it, I'm just like, yeah, this is so specifically early 2000s, though.
oh, yeah. That said, though, next week we return to Daredevil. Thank you all for listening, and bye.
Bye, everyone.
Excellent to each other.